Warning, the following podcast may discuss topics of violence that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Above and Beyond. As always, I'm your host, Philip Kesterson, and tonight I have a fantastic episode lineup for you guys, and I'm very excited to do it. To start off, to those who celebrate it, happy Thanksgiving, and to those who don't, happy Thursday. Now, tonight's episode is special because on one hand, this is somebody that I'm very excited to do. I've wanted to do him for a long time, and some of you have also wanted me to cover him because I have been recommended him quite a few times, but the circumstances lined up that I was finally able to cover this man. Now that man is Audie Leon Murphy. Some of you may know him, some of you may not, but what most people don't know about him is that he is the most decorated soldier in the entirety of World War II. Now Audie Murphy was not just a soldier, he was also a songwriter, an actor, and a slew of other things, but one thing he was not was a quitter. From dropping out of school at a young age to losing both his parents within a year of each other, he would go on to try four different times to enlist in the military following the United States' entry into the Second World War. And after the war, he would go on to act in around 50 different movies, including a biopic of his own actions during the war. Now usually, when I do an episode, I will cover the man or woman's early life and then talk about what they did that is considered above and beyond, and then talk about what they did after the event. However, tonight I will talk only about his early life and his actions during World War II, and then, considering that most of all of his post-war excursions, including starring on the big screen, I will leave that up to Derek and Sam over at the Isle of Old Movies podcast to tell you all about.
Hello to the listeners of the Above and Beyond podcast. I'm Derek and I love old movies. We've got Sam the sidekick here.
Hello, and thanks to PJ for having us on his most excellent show.
Over at our podcast, we focus on the films of old Hollywood and the people who made them, and our all-war movie, Month of November, brought us to look at the actor who is as much an action hero in real life as he was in his films.
Of course, we're talking about Audie Murphy.
Everyone should talk more about Audie Murphy.
A lot more than they do, that's for sure.
Well, why don't we?
For sure. Specifically, let's bring the info not so much about Audie Murphy, the friggin' war hero, PJ can do that, but more about Audie Murphy, the film star, who appeared in over 45 movies.
Operating from underneath what he considered a dearth of actual acting talent, Murphy was able to leverage his considerable renown as a legitimate war hero into a successful career in the movies. One of the things that gave him great appeal to audiences was that he didn't look at all what the vision of a film action hero was. He was short, slim, very youthful looking, almost the exact opposite of quintessential Hollywood action hero John Wayne. And yet, his authenticity could not be questioned.
A realistic person that audiences could not only better relate to, but could imagine being.
Well, maybe not that handsome.
He was pretty handsome.
Handsome enough for Empire magazine to name him number 55 on the list of top 100 sexiest stars in film history.
Ooh la la.
It was none other than legendary film star James Cagney who learned of Murphy's exploits and brought him to Hollywood, personally paying for him to have acting lessons so he could transition into the entertainment industry. Now, we've talked a lot about people who have been discovered.
Yes, but never like that. That's a one-of-a-kind story.
Once in Hollywood, he began dating actress Wanda Hendricks, and that connection helped land him two movies playing bit parts. But his third film appearance, in 1949's Bad Boy, gave Murphy his first starring role.
Bit player to leading man in three movies. That doesn't happen every day.
In two of his next three films, Murphy played Billy the Kid and then Jesse James, a role he would reprise in his last film appearance 19 years later. And he really began to cement his career as a leading man, particularly in westerns.
How many actors have played both Jesse and Billy? That seems like it would be a pretty short list.
Mm-hmm. Murphy was signed to a contract by Universal, a 7-picture deal, but it left some room for him to be loaned out to other studios, like MGM.
Appearing in films like The Red Badge of Courage, under legendary director John Huston, The Cimarron Kid, and Destry only deepened his stardom, but when it came time to adapt his own autobiography, To Hell and Back, into a feature film, Murphy didn't want to be in it.
Feeling that he now somehow didn't fit the mold of his own legend, he suggested other actors for the part, most notably Tony Curtis.
Yeah, that would have been a pass for me.
Oh yeah?
He's on that Burt Lancaster level for me. I mean, I know he was a huge star, but I just don't get it.
Huh. Eventually, pressure from the financial backers of the film led to Audie Murphy, the movie star, agreeing to take on the role of, well, Audie Murphy, the legendary war hero. And the resulting film became the largest financial hit in the history of Universal Pictures.
So, like, bigger than Frankenstein?
Yeah.
And Dracula?
Mm-hmm. And All Quiet on the Western Front. Bigger than them all. And it stayed that way for 20 more years until the release of Jaws in 1975. So to put that in perspective, Universal Studios was founded in 1912, and until 1975, the most successful film it had ever put out was To Hell and Back, a film about and starring Audie Murphy.
That's incredible.
Now, his career in film continued after this crescendo with more westerns and war films, perhaps most notably reteaming with John Huston and co-starring with Burt Lancaster and Audrey Hepburn in 1960's The Unforgiven.
That's another thing that was so cool about him. Audie Murphy could be a real down-to-earth and humble guy, and despite his own level of fame and stardom, never had a problem taking the secondary role to a bigger star, or even playing the villain when required.
Like in Night Passage, which he made with James Stewart, and one of our show's favorite actors, Dan Duryea.
The 60s were still a productive decade for Murphy, but the quality of his films, their successes, and his own personal fortunes all took a downturn as he struggled with PTSD, drug addiction, and bankruptcy. His last film, A Time for Dying, closed the decade and serves as the capstone for his career. Prior to his death in 1971, he had been in talks to play the bad guy in an upcoming police action film starring Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry.
That would have been something.
Of course it would have. Because Audie Murphy, he was something. Sadly, he passed away in 1971 at the too young age of 45.
But his influence and impact lingered for quite some time after that. Robert Stack admitted that his portrayal of Elliot Ness on The Untouchables was based in part on Audie Murphy.
The Frederick Zoller character in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds is intended to be a Nazi version of Audie Murphy.
And John Rambo, that character, as written in the original First Blood novel, was also based, in part, on Audie Murphy.
It's all pretty incredible. Definitely a great example of someone who went above and beyond.
Thanks to PJ for having us on as part of this episode. We hope you enjoyed it.
So as you just heard, Audie Murphy's life as an actor had a fundamental impact on the film industry. A huge thank you to both Derek and Sam for taking the time out of their schedule to be on the show, and I cannot recommend enough that you go listen to their episode on Audie Murphy to hear the rest of his life as an actor. To make finding their show easier, I will be putting a link to their episode in the description, but you can also find them on most major platforms from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. You guys give me support by listening to my show, so all I ask is that you give their show some love as well. Okay, so now let's get into the military side of Audie Murphy's life. He was born on June 20th, 1925, and he was born to a poor rancher family in northeast Texas. Now, the 20s were a good time for Texas. Their economy was heavily based on three main things during this time, and that was oil, cotton, and lumber. And this caused their financial system to boom more than most other states in the Union at the time. However, Black Tuesday was right around the corner. Now, what Black Tuesday is the date referring to October 29th, 1929. And this is the day the stock market crashed in the United States and sent most of the world into a depression that would last until the mid-1940s. Now, like every other U.S. state, Texas was hit hard. Murphy's family was a descendant of an Irish sharecropping family, and his father, Emmett, fathered 12 children but had absolutely no plans on how to feed them or even father them. Throughout Audie's life, his father would be there one minute and then gone the next, and due to financial hardships of the depression and Emmett's unwillingness to stay around and help out, Audie was forced to drop out of school during the fifth grade to take a job picking cotton for about a dollar a day and would hunt small animals like rabbits and birds to help feed his family. Now, in 1940, his father would officially abandon the family for the last time, and just a year later, his mother would pass away from a combination of endocarditis and pneumonia. Now, his mother's death greatly affected him and stuck with him for the rest of his life, and at one point he would say about it, quote, "She rarely talked and always seemed to be searching for something. What it was, I do not know. We did not discuss our feelings. But when she passed away, she took something of me with her. It seems that I have been searching for it ever since," end quote. So you can see how he felt lost without his mother. Losing a parent is never easy, and while I am fortunate enough to not have to gone through that, my sincerest condolences go out to you listeners that have experienced this. After the death of his mother, Audie took up two jobs at a repair shop and a general store, but all he ever really wanted to do was be a soldier. And in December of 1941, things would be set into motion that would give him the opportunity to attempt to be one. So now we're going to look at Audie Murphy's entry into World War II. But before we do that, I'm going to pause right here for a message from our sponsor.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace.
So the Japanese attack on the American fleet that was anchored at Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands is the event that would force the United States officially into World War II, despite them staying on the sidelines of it for over 3 years. Now, after the attack, Audie Murphy was one of the first to try and enlist. First, he went to the Army. They told him that he was too young and underweight. So then he went to the Navy. They, too, told him that he was underage and underweight. Finally, he returned to the few, the proud, the Marines. But they also said he was too young and too skinny. He was rejected, but he definitely was not going to quit. He would try again with the Army, only this time he would have the aid of his sister, who falsified his birthday by 1 year to give him the minimum age requirement and allowed him to enlist on June 30th, 1942. This is when he would officially enlist into the United States Army. So first, he would travel to Fort Walters in Texas to complete his basic training, and it was here that he would acquire the first two of many awards he would receive. Now, the first was a marksman badge with rifle component bar, and the second was an expert badge with a bayonet component bar. So after basic training, he would then be shipped to Fort Meade in Maryland to finish his advanced infantry training. Once he had finished all of his required training, it was time for him to go to war. On February 20th, 1943, he would be shipped out to Casablanca, attached to Company B, 1st Battalion, 15th Infantry Regiment of the 3rd Infantry Division. Now, while in Algeria, he would take part in vigorous training for the Allied assault into Sicily. And by July 15th, he had been promoted to corporal and would see his first combat during the Allied landing at Licata, Sicily, in July. Here, he would serve as a division runner and would score his first couple of kills as he stumbled upon two Italian officers while on a scouting mission, and after a brief firefight, he managed to outgun them. In September of 1943, the Allies would launch another invasion into mainland Salerno, and during a scouting mission around the Volturno River, he and two other soldiers would be ambushed, and after one of his men was killed, Audie and the other men successfully took down five German troops. Now, fast forward to October, and he was promoted to sergeant, after he and his company would repel a German attack on their hilltop position, killing three of the seven and taking the remaining four prisoner. By the end of January 1944, Murphy had reached the rank of platoon sergeant of Company B and was about to earn his first combat medal. On March 2nd, 1944, he and his platoon were holed up in an abandoned farmhouse to avoid the elements when a German tank began to pass by. He and his men successfully took out the crew, and then he would alone crawl close enough to the tank to launch a rifle-propelled grenade at it to destroy it. For this, he was awarded the Bronze Star. Now, Murphy and the men of Company B, 15th Infantry, would be awarded the Combat Infantryman badge on May 8th. And on June 4th, 1944, Allied forces, including Audie Murphy, would liberate Rome, and he would remain here until the end of July. Which, honestly, spending a month in Rome as a vacation during a war is not like he was in a bad place. Now, on August 15th, 1944, Audie Murphy would receive his next combat medal, and this was the Distinguished Service Cross. Now, this was awarded to him after his platoon was moving through a vineyard in southern France and were ambushed by two German troops. As his men began to flee, Murphy grabbed a machine gun that had fallen on the ground and returned fire. He would kill two Germans and wound one other one, and it was here that Murphy's best friend would be killed as he moved towards two German soldiers that were attempting surrender. As he got closer, one of the two Germans pulled out a weapon and killed the man. Now, Murphy, seeing his best friend just get killed in front of him, responded by gunning both of them down and charging alone at the building that they had come out of. And inside this building, he killed six Germans, he wounded two, and then took 11 of them prisoner. Now, as a child, Audie Murphy was known to have a short temper and react badly towards bad news, and seeing the death of his best friend made him just see blood, and he was hell-bent on avenging him, and that's exactly what he did. Now, Murphy's unit would next collectively receive the Presidential Unit Citation after their actions during the Montelimar offensive on the 27th and the 28th of August. Murphy would earn his first Purple Heart after he was hit in the foot by a mortar shell on September 15th, and then earned a Silver Star after killing four and wounding three Germans who were manning a machine gun position. Now, 3 days later, he would be promoted to second lieutenant after he crawled towards a German position under direct fire and directed his men where to move for over an hour. For over an hour, he sat on this hilltop alone with just a radio under direct artillery fire and small arms fire by the Germans. And by the time his men had taken this hill, 15 Germans had been killed and about 35 had been wounded. Now, he would gain his second Purple Heart on October 26th of 1944, and this was after he rushed two snipers who were firing at the 3rd platoon of his company who got caught out in the open of a street, and one of them shot Murphy in the hip. Now, Murphy responded by firing exactly one shot and hitting the sniper directly between the eyes, which is an amazing shot, but when you think back to the fact that he had this expert marksmanship badge, then it kind of makes sense that he could make this shot. Now, unfortunately, from his wound, he would contract gangrene that resulted in him being hospital-bound until about mid-January, and he wouldn't return to his men until about the 14th of January. Upon entering the town of Holzfehr, he came under the sights of a fierce German counterattack. Now, here he would be hit in both of his legs and receive a Purple Heart, but ultimately, they were able to hold the town. Now, just a couple days after this is when things get, like, extreme in Audie Murphy's military career. Now, everything he's done up to this point, from taking the 11 prisoners and avenging his friend in the building to taking out the tank when him and his men were outnumbered, those were awesome things. But what he did, what I'm about to tell you that he did, it's phenomenal. Now, not too long after holding the town of Holzwehr, him and his men were moving through a field with an M10 tank destroyer, and the tank got hit by anti-tank fire from the Germans, and it sent it ablaze, and it forced the crew and Audie Murphy's men to retreat into some nearby woods. Murphy, however, thought, screw that, I'm not going to retreat, so he stayed near the tank, and he directed artillery strikes on the Germans to cover the retreat of his men. Now, his men sat back in the woods, and they saw what Audie Murphy was doing, and they were like, he's going to get killed out there, but I don't fully understand why they didn't go out to help him or rally with him. But the fact of the matter is that Audie Murphy sat next to this tank for a while by himself before climbing up on the tank and taking control of the 50 caliber mounted machine gun that was on the tank. And for over an hour, he held this position. For over an hour, he sat on this tank alone, out in the open, under direct fire from all kinds of German weapons, and fought them off. He would kill every single German that came into his line of sight. Now, miraculously, while he's sitting up here, he would only be hit once in his leg, and he only fell back to the woods with his men once he officially, like, completely ran out of ammo. Like, he was determined to hold his position, and he was not about to give it up for anything. Now, disregarding his own wound, he actually rallied his men in the wood line and led a counterattack to repel the advancing Germans, and for his actions here, he was given the Congressional Medal of Honor. Later, when he was asked what exactly compelled him to jump on that tank and grab that machine gun, he simply responded by saying, they were killing my friends. So now you know, he put his life on the line because he was scared of losing his friends. And knowing that he had lost his best friend not too long before this, it makes sense that he was willing to do this. And it's a completely selfless act that you don't see a lot, but whenever you see it, it's always like in a grand fashion, and what he did was a grand fashion. Now, for his service during the months of January and February of 1945, he was promoted to first lieutenant, and here he was given the Legion of Merit and moved to regimental headquarters to be made a liaison officer. So once he was moved to regimental headquarters, basically his time in combat was over. But he had a hell of a combat record up to this point. Now, keep in mind, 1945, by the time that the war ended, in the European theater in May of 1945, Audie Murphy had not even turned 21 yet. Everything that he did, all the combat he went through, standing on that hilltop directing his men, taking that house with all the Germans in it, manning this machine gun by himself. He was only 19 years old during all this. It's ridiculous. And I know that some people are going to say, well, a 19-year-old in 1945, that's like a 30-year-old in today's world. And I hear that a lot. But that's not the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is he was a 19-year-old kid. Like, he was fighting for a country that he wasn't even legally allowed to drink alcohol in yet. It's phenomenal that he did this. Not to mention the fact that he was a first lieutenant before his 21st birthday. Like, that's incredible enough. But over the course of his military career, he would receive the following medals. So here, I need you guys to bear with me. There are a lot of them. Some of them are French-sounding. I do not speak French. I will try to do my best. So in his career, he would receive the Medal of Honor. He received the Distinguished Service Cross, 2 Silver Stars, the Legion of Merit, 2 Bronze Stars, 3 Purple Hearts, the Outstanding Service Medal, the Good Conduct Medal, 2 Presidential Unit Citations, the American Campaign Medal, the European African Middle Eastern Campaign Medal, the World War II Victory Medal, the Army of Occupation Medal, the Armed Forces Reserve Medal, the Combat Infantry Badge, the Marksmanship Badge, the Expert Marksmanship Badge, the French Fourragère, if I'm saying that wrong, I'm sorry, the French Legion of Honor, 2 French Croix de Guerre, the Belgian Croix de Guerre, the Medal of Liberated France, and the Texas Legislative Medal of Honor. It's insane. He racked up a total of 23 medals, and he would receive every single possible combat medal for valor that the United States could offer. And honestly, I think if they could have given him more medals for valor, they probably would have. Like, it's insane the amount of stuff that he did. But with the number of medals that he gained, it makes him the single most decorated soldier in the entirety of World War II. Like, of all the countries that fought, he is it. He is the number one most decorated soldier of the war. And he's also one of the most decorated in all of American history. So it's incredible that, like I said, this 19-year-old kid is doing all this. So after the war, he was officially discharged on September 21st, 1944. And this is where things are going to kind of take a serious turn. Not necessarily for him, just in the show in general. You know, my podcast is completely based on the idea of people who go above and beyond in military in combat and stuff like that. But I don't condone warfare. I don't condone the violence. But I appreciate that warfare brings out sometimes the bravest of the brave, or it brings out the best of the best, or just it brings out the humanity in people, while others it strips them away. Warfare is something that I do not like that it happens, but I believe it to be a necessary thing that is always going to happen. When I talk about these men and women who do these things, it's important to know that I'm not necessarily celebrating the killing that they've done or the destruction that they've caused, but simply the fact that one person can do these things. And sometimes, and what I'm about to get into, sometimes the things that these people do, it sticks with them for the rest of their life. When I talked about Charles Whittlesey, his PTSD eventually drove him to kill himself. When I talked about Ludmila Pavlyuchenko, the sight of seeing her husband die in front of her, it stuck with her for the rest of her life. Audie Murphy is no different. Like, all the things he did, he suffered greatly from post-traumatic stress disorder. And at the time of World War II, post-traumatic stress disorder didn't even officially have a name. It was just called battle fatigue. And going back to, like, Charles Whittlesey in World War I, it was just called shell shock. But Audie Murphy suffered a lot from it, to the point that he was experiencing horrible nightmares almost every night, and what little sleep that he could get, it was horrible quality. And he slept with a loaded pistol under his pillow every single night because he was terrified that the Germans were going to come for him in his sleep. Like, that's insane. His first wife, Dixie Hendricks, once claimed that in a fit of rage, and she herself even went on to say that she knows that he couldn't really help it, that he snapped out of reality. She claimed that he held her at gunpoint one time. He would talk very, very little about the war to her or anybody, but she also noted at one point she witnessed him crying uncontrollably while watching news footage of German orphans from the result of the war. Audie Murphy hated that he did the things that he did, but they made him who he was. And he was good at what he did. And he had a lot of remorse for the people that he killed, but he knew that he needed to do it in order to make a better world. To combat his PTSD, he fell prey to pills, and he would become addicted to them for a long time. But he actually overcame on his own, he overcame his own addiction by locking himself in a hotel room for days until he felt that he did not need them anymore. He also turned to writing both poetry and books. Now, he has a book called To Hell and Back, which is what I use for the reference for a lot of the things that I talked about. This it recounts his the things that he went through in World War II. And it even went on to become a feature film, a biopic about himself that he starred in. And it's an incredible film. It's an incredible book. And if you get the chance to read it or watch it, you can. You know, fast forwarding a little bit, after the Korean War and towards the end of the Vietnam War, because unfortunately, Audie Murphy died in a plane crash in 1971, which it's a horrible end to an amazing man. But at the end of the Korean War and towards the end of the Vietnam War, which he wouldn't live to see the end of, he would witness all these soldiers coming home, these young soldiers that were about the same age as he was when he was fighting in Europe. He would witness that they were coming home and that they were having these similar symptoms that he did. And upon hearing how many of these young men suffered from what would later officially be called PTSD, and after he heard how many were taking their own lives because of things that they did and saw, he began to publicly speak out about his own issues that he suffered from as a result of warfare. And it's widely considered that Audie Murphy is one of the leading voices in an effort to battle PTSD and returning veterans. Now, when he wasn't advocating for PTSD relief, Audie Murphy also went on to have a pretty successful film career, playing major characters from Jesse James to himself. However, as I said at the top of the show, I'm going to leave up the film aspect of Audie Murphy's life to Derek and Sam over at I Love Old Movies podcast to tell you all about that. Now, if you'd like to hear more about his film career, or if you just like old movies, I suggest you give their show a chance. It's an amazing show, and a link to their show and their episode on Audie Murphy could be found in the description. But that's going to do it for this episode. As I just said, be sure to pop on over to I Love Old Movies to hear more about Audie Murphy. And while you're there, be sure to give them 5 stars and listen to their other episodes. The father-daughter duo of Derek and Sam have an amazing show, and I cannot thank them enough for being on my own show and for allowing me a spot on theirs. Also, because I know that PTSD is an epidemic and it's a serious thing, if you are a veteran and you suffer from PTSD symptoms and you need any help at all, feel free to call 1-800-273-8255 or visit veterancrisisline.net. Now, the average number of veteran suicides is unfortunately around 22 a day, and that is just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking that we send these men off to fight in these wars, and then they come back and they don't use resources that they have. If you are a veteran suffering from anything like this, it's important to know that you don't need to fight alone and that there are resources for you to use. I will put a link to the Veteran Crisis Line, and I will put the phone number that I just mentioned down in the description. So like I said, if you need them, use them. Let's get that number 22 down, 22 a day. Let's get that number down to preferably zero. As always, if you would like to email the show to give a suggestion or ask a question for another Q&A episode or just to say hi, you can do that at above.beyondpodcast@gmail.com, or you can pop on over to the Facebook page and message me, and the Facebook page is facebook.com/aboveandbeyondpodcast. As always, I'm your host, Philip Kesterson, and thank you for listening, and I will see you next week on Above and Beyond.